Blog Talk Radio.
Labyrinth time. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. I hope that little peppy Caribbean music has put you in the mood to labrish. I want to welcome my callers on the board right now from 631 and 718 area codes, and our callers or our listeners online, and all the others that are going to be straggling in. I'm sure we're going to have enough cheers as we relax in the backyard and lavish on our tour of Jamaica. We're discovering Jamaica one parish at a time. And so far, we've had a wonderful trip. We are on our 10th parish, so we've only got four to go. So tonight, I want to celebrate one of the smaller parishes. As a matter of fact, Hanover is our feature tonight, and it next to Kingston, it's the smallest. So, you know, as we say in Jamaica, sometimes something might be little, but it's talawa, and that means it can produce big things, because it so happens that Hanover happens to be the birthplace of one of Jamaica's national hero that is really larger than life. Because when a person's name and fame lives on beyond their life, then they are larger than life. Because even in death, we celebrate them. And that hero would be Sir Alexander Bustamante. So we're going to talk a little bit about him tonight, and what he contributed, and also the parish he was born. So I want to invite any of my listeners who want to participate in the labyrinth to just raise your hands by hitting 1 on your keypad. And in the meantime, I wanted to welcome our listeners and remind them that each week we're here at 8 o'clock on a Wednesday to celebrate the beautiful island that I was born and left long ago and have fond memories of. And Backyard Labyrinth is established to celebrate those memories. We're here to research, explore things that we might not be aware of recently or perhaps don't remember from our past. So it's that kind of show. We're not political or being right, we're just talking about some facts that we happen to know personally or we have discovered from researching. And my name is Margaret Marshall, and I'm your host. And I have several loyal listeners and a co-host. I don't know if she'll be on tonight, but I'd like to welcome any of our listeners that's on the board right now and hearing my voice that would like to interact with me to just hit 1 on your telephone. And for my Skype in listener, that would mean hitting an extra one, and I am hoping that a hand will go up and I'll know you want to talk to me. I see we have someone Skyping in. See this technology? I can tell the Skypers and the ones that are calling on their regular phone. Blog Talk Radio is really cool, and I just love it. And it's helping us to leave our stories, and that's part of what Backyard Labrish is about, because here we share personal stories, as well as on our website, www.backyardlabrish.com. And for non-Jamaicans who might not know what a labrish is, I'm sure most Jamaicans will know what a labrish is, but I've had some of my American friends that want some clarification because they've never heard of a labrish. So my explanation is that a labrish is getting together with friends or acquaintances to talk, to just talk, a casual talk. It's not a platform for right and wrong and, you know, who's doing what, when, in a hostile way, but here we're just discussing what we think about something or what we found out about something. And it's mostly when friends get together to talk about one subject or several subjects. And in the old time days, you know, a labrish between friends could last all night, especially if you had a couple of drinks to go with it. And our favorite drink is in Jamaica. Jamaicans know what it is that warms you up. And most of the housewives and mothers use it for medicinal purposes. Just one whiff of it can relax you. I'm talking about white rum, not anything else. Anyway, tonight we're discussing Hanover, and I need a raised hand if my loyal listener from the Bronx, home of the Yankees, is online. Would you please raise your hand? I don't see a raised hand, so I suppose he's not here yet. So let me just tell you, he's here, all right. So let me welcome him in, and then I'll get back to discussing Hanover. Welcome, Mr. Listener from the Bronx, home of the Yankees. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm here to learn tonight. This is one of the parishes that I don't know that much about.
Ooh.
In fact, it's the parish that I just drive through, whether I'm coming from Montego Bay or going to Negril. I don't even finke on...
I like that word, Jamaican.
Like that,
finke, all right.
Yeah.
We're getting into some roots then.
Right, so I'm just listening.
Okay, all right. Well, we welcome you as a listener, as usual, and I know you'll have something to contribute. But I want to start off, for especially some of our students who might, you know, click on this particular show to find something out about Hanover or any of the parishes. I wanted to go in a little more details, that Hanover is one of the smallest parishes. It's next to Kingston. Kingston is actually the smallest, and then Hanover comes second. Its capital is Lucy, and it is located, the parish is located on the northwest tip of the island. It is part of the county of Cornwall, and if you remember, Jamaicans know that we have three counties, Cornwall, Middlesex, and Surrey. But Hanover is bordered by St. James in the east and Westmoreland in the south. So most of the other parishes that we talked about was joined in different places, but Hanover is by the sea, as I look on it on the map. So there's no bordering on the outskirts of it. It would be ocean. You knew that much, right, Leigh?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Hanover was established in 1723 and was given the family name of a British monarch, George I, who was from the House of Hanover in Germany. That's interesting. In the early colonial days, Lucy, the main town, was an even busier town than Montego Bay. By the mid-18th century, Lucy was the hub of an important sugar-growing region, and the town was prosperous as a sugar port and market center. Jews from Europe settled in the parish as merchants, storekeepers, haberdashery owners, shoemakers, and goldsmiths, and it became a free port. Now, after emancipation in 1834, the free people prospered and supplied produce to much of the rest of Jamaica. The harbor was used to export bananas until after the 1960s. A deep water pier was built, but this has been restricted only by the shipping of molasses. They only used to ship molasses, I suppose, because of the sugar estates. In 1983, the port was closed, but the old Fort Charlotte still stands at one side of the entrance of the harbor. It was never used. I thought it was interesting to know that this was a British monarch, but he was from the House of Hanover in Germany. And I am sure that, I don't know, it was just named after him, I suppose, because it was a British colony. But I wanted to ask you, Leigh, if you are familiar, I'm not sure, where is Germantown in Jamaica? What parish?
I think that's St. Elizabeth, to be honest with you.
Oh, well, we haven't done that yet. I was just curious as I saw the mention of him being from the House of Hanover in Germany.
Well, that really is not significant in that a lot of the British monarchs are related to their German monarchs because they intermarried. And, you know, you have the House of Tudor and the House of Hanover.
Right.
Tudor is more British. Hanover is German. So that's how that works. So George I just happens to be from the House of Hanover.
I got you.
And as the reigning monarch, Hanover, took that name.
I got you. It said something, and I'm quoting now from the Jamaican Heritage Encyclopedia by Olive Senior, who's quite an accomplished writer about Jamaica. She does novels and poetry, and I'm going to perhaps feature some of her material, you know, in some of our next segments. But in her encyclopedia, she has a couple of other interesting things that I thought was interesting. Now, she said this was the Protestant German family, which became the new royal line in England in 1714. With the accession of George I to the English ascension to the English throne after the death of Queen Anne, the last English monarch of the Stuart line. So you're right in that he came after Queen Anne, and he was from that particular house.
Right.
Now, because it sort of is a small parish, right, currently, they have the estimated population at 67,000. That was from 1999. You know, when you think of the population of some of the other parishes that we did, that is really a small amount. And a large percentage of them live in the capital, which I suppose would be Lucy. And the majority of the population, they said they have a racial breakdown here, which, because, you know, it's a Wikipedia this came from, they had 2.1% of other, 2.3% of Latins, 3.7% of Asians. That's quite a mix. And then the rest is 0.8% white and 91.1% black. That's how they have it on Wikipedia. So I suppose I was a little puzzled as to the difference between Asian, Latin, and other, 2.1% other, which is quite almost as much as the Asians.
Well, you know, that's who knows? Maybe they're involved with Middle Eastern types as well as
right.
The other. You know, there's a sizable amount of people from the Middle East in Jamaica even now.
I never thought that there were that much percentage-wise in the rural areas. That's never just something I never thought about.
Well, in the sense that you know, some of them follow the type of produce, certain types of produce, and they would trade in those things. Lusa, the capital of Hanover, being one of the ports that they ship.
Right. You know, I remember last week when we did Manchester with Mandeville. Mandeville is the only capital that was not located on a water, a major river, or the ocean. So, so this happened to be a port, and
right.
That's why they had all the Jews from Europe, and you know, the merchants and the storekeepers and all of that, I suppose, landing there and making it their home. So I'm sure there's still descendants of them that would still be in that area.
Right.
Okay. So at least we learned something new. There's just some things you just don't really think of in detail. But that was interesting to me. Now, it has here that it shears. I thought this was, it has one of a very prestigious resort. Can you guess what that is?
Is it Sandals?
No, it's Tri-Hall, the Round Hill.
Oh, yes, of course.
You know, it's like creme de la creme.
Yeah, we know that Tri-Hall Golf and Tennis Club is situated there. Yeah.
Well, it's east of Lucy, really. It's in the village of Hopewell.
Right.
And it has Round Hill, which is noted for its golf course.
Yeah.
That's in eastern Hanover. And they share the Negro Strip with Westmoreland.
Okay.
Part of that strip is in that parish. Were you familiar with that?
Well, it goes back to what I say, that because of the spillover from Negril and the other side, Montego Bay, I mean, you don't really think of
The separation of the parishes.
Mm-hmm. For a long time, I thought they were actually one, because Hanover is so small, you know.
Right. But did you realize all along that it was so small?
Yes.
You did?
Definitely, mm-hmm. Because it takes you about 3 minutes to drive past or drive through.
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean?
Right. Now, it has some famous history, though, besides Sir Alexander, which we're going to talk about in a little while. But the Hanover Parish Church, it is uncertain exactly when its 18th century building was constructed in Lucy, the capital. It contains a number of monuments to interesting persons, such as Sir Simon Clark, who married an heiress of the Horton family, and whose grandfather, a Navy officer, was supposedly transported to Jamaica for highway robbery, whatever that means. Monument is also here to John Castello, publisher of the Falmouth Post, who more than any other individual helped to create the legend of the White Witch of Rose Hall. I thought that was interesting. And I didn't know that this John Castello helped to publish it. Did you know that there was a Falmouth Post, which must have been from in the 18-something, that publication was, it doesn't say if it's still in existence. And I wasn't able to find any information about it online. But do you know anything about a paper called the Falmouth Post?
No, I don't.
Okay. Anyway, there is a Walter Jekyll who lived in 1849 to 1929, who is buried in the Lucy Churchyard, and he was formerly an Anglican clergyman. He later taught singing and interesting himself in Jamaican folk life. He resided for a time at Guava Ridge in the mountains of St. Andrew, where he collected the material which he published in a volume called Jamaica Song and Story in 1907. And he was a patron of the writer Claude McKay. Remember when we talked about Claude McKay?
Yeah.
And Claude McKay's time was from 1889 to 1948. And it was he who encouraged McKay to write in Jamaican dialect and assisted him to go to the United States for further study. I remember remarking how impressed I was when I read that Claude McKay, who was the direct descendant of slaves, migrated to the United States when he was 22. You know, I went on to do all the things that we talked about. And I even said, you know, he must have had some means in order to be able to travel and do. He went to the university. He went to two universities here. And here I am now researching Hanover's Parish Church and finds this about this person. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
At least I thought it was. To know that I was wondering how McKay, you know, did what he did. But now I found out that he was helped by this Anglican clergyman. So it's sort of all tied in.
Yeah.
And he said that McKay wrote about this church person, that he was an eccentric, and he called him the Squire Genser, G-E-N-S-I-R, Genser. In his novel, Banana Bottom, Claude McKay wrote a novel about that, and talked of his relationship in the autobiography, My Green Hills of Jamaica. And that was published in, 1933. I said, wow, how interesting is that? Now, let me just tell you a little bit, and people who have these names or know someone with that name can perhaps relate to it now. Horton, this is also in the Encyclopedia of Jamaica. A place named in Hanover Parish derived from the name of a prominent family, Horton James, a hyphenated name, which settled in the area. Fat Hog Quarter and Horton Court near Lucy were part of the Horton James estate. That's quite a name, Fat Hog Quarters. The history of the James family goes back to Richard James, who arrived with the English Army of Conquest in 1655 and was given land in the area. His son, Richard James, was the first child of English parents to be born on the island. This James owned large tracts of land in Hanover and Westmoreland. They became custos of the parishes of Westmoreland, St. Elizabeth, and Hanover, and was colonel of the Hanover militia. Now, Colonel James was another claim to fame. He is said to have lived to age 103. And attributed his longevity to a diet almost exclusively of cocoa in his later years. His second wife, Anne Horton, came from a wealthy Barbados family. In time, the local family became Horton James, a distinguished descendant of the family of the Rhodes James. This is 1862 to 1936, a famous English educator who is best known as the author of Ghost Stories of an Antiquity. Now, these are all published like in 1915. And I said, darn, I never heard of these books. Ghost Stories of it. Oh, gosh. So there was a headquarter house, which is in, this is a different thing. But I just found that quite interesting because although it was a small parish, they had seemed to have had quite a few things going on. And it is not currently now, do you know it has the least crime of, I suppose because it's small too, you know, there's everything goes by the amount of people in any one area. So it's listed here, you know, when you have the current, they have current information about what's going on in some of these parishes. And it says that they have a very low crime rate. And I said, well, that's good. You know, so.
Well, there's probably not too much to steal or to.
I was waiting for that. I was waiting for that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's quite interesting. Now it is the, as I said, it is a little parish, but it produced a larger than life icon. And that is in Sir Alexander, William Alexander Bustamante. They described him here as Jamaica's most flamboyant and charismatic politician. And he was born William Alexander Clark. How come? William Alexander Clark. So how did he end up with the name Bustamante?
I think... some parent of his came from Cuba.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, let me read on here, because that, I don't make the connection yet. But, you know, he was born in 1884. It's funny how when I was young and, you know, I was there while he was going to do his thing, I never thought of him being born in 1884. That sounds so ancient. Now, his father, Robert Constantine Clark, a member of the declining white plantocracy, was the overseer of a small mixed crop plantation called, it's spelled B-L-E-N-H-E-I-M. How do you pronounce it?
Blenheim.
Blenheim in the parish of Hanover.
That's
in the then isolated northwest coast of the island. By virtue of the second marriage, Eliza Hunter, his parental grandmother, to Alexander Shearer, he became distantly related to both Norman Washington Manley and Michael Manley, as well as to Hugh Shearer. So they were all related.
Yep.
Shearer, Michael, and I suppose Norman and Buster Manley were all cousins.
Yeah.
I didn't know that Shearer was one of his cousins. Did you?
No, but Shearer is from the parish of Trelawney, Falmouth.
Now, I knew about him and the Manleys, but I never knew about him and Shearer. But that's what it's listed here in this.
Well, we knew that Manley was a cousin of Bustamante.
Right. I knew that, but I didn't know about Shearer. And here it says now, Bustamante is the surname which he formally adopted in 1944.
Mm-hmm.
Although he had been using that name regularly since 1920. I'm just curious as to why he selected that name, because he was really born Clark. That was his last name. His father's name was Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that they mention his father's name, and says a member of the declining white plantocracy. And he was the overseer of the small mixed crop plantation. But anyway, oh, yes, here it is, that the name is derived from the Spanish mariner who adopted him at the age of 5.
Okay.
Taking him to Spain, where he was sent to school and where he saw active military duty. However, Bustamante did not leave Jamaica until 1905, when he was 21 years old, and he left as part of the early Jamaican migration to Cuba. Employment opportunities were expanding in the sugar industry.
That's what I probably vaguely remembered.
Okay, I want to remind our listeners, I get so carried away with reading this history that to me is so fascinating, I forget to tell people what they're listening to, but you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio, and I see I have another raised hands of one of my listeners, so I'm going to open up the mic to 631, just a minute, let's see how we open up. Good evening, you're on Blog Talk Radio, Backyard Labrish. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, Margaret. Good evening. Hi, Lee.
Hey, Janine.
Oh, hi there. Tell the listeners who you are and where you're calling from.
This is Janine.
Janine from?
From Long Island.
Okay, welcome, hi. Long Island.
And I'm just calling to say hi, also to add to Germantown.
Okay.
Hi.
We also have Germantown in Trelawney.
In Trelawney, too.
And Westmoreland.
Oh, both.
Westmoreland.
Mm-hmm. Westmoreland and Trelawney, because I remember hearing my my father's families talking about Germantown.
There you go.
So I checked with my cousin to make sure I'm not being stupid about this.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, yes, there is a Germantown also in Trelawney.
Hmm. Interesting.
Three parishes that we have Germantown.
And funny. I was just looking at my notes, Janine, and I saw where in 1836, German settlement was established at Seaford Town.
Hmm.
Now I don't remember what location Seaford Town is, but. That's what's in my notes, so I'm going to have to look up where Seaford Town is.
Right.
That from what you said, it could very well be down in Westmoreland.
Yes, and Trelawney also.
Mm. Interesting. Well, we're going to be doing Trelawney and Westmoreland next because we only have 4 parishes to go. This is so cool. I mean, I'm learning so much just from doing the research and having you all participate with me in this labyrinth. But the thing I'm going to read next is going to clarify why I'm so passionate about what I'm doing and hoping that our listeners online when we have our show and those who listen to the show after will get the point that each individual have a story and we need to be leaving our stories. The next paragraph in the notes I have says, of Bustamante's early life, little is known. Isn't that something? With such a powerful man, we don't really know much about his early life. And some people might say, well, what difference does it make? Well, you know, he became such a large person in personality and in his contribution to the island on a whole and to thousands of people's lives all over the world, that you never know. Something in the early life might be interesting to someone. So I just encourage all my listeners, young and old, to participate with us in the backyard and also to visit our website and leave some story, some history. Write your own story. You know, it operates just like MySpace or Facebook. Only it's just a community for backyarders, so you can invite your friends and relatives to view it. You can make it public or you can make it private and just let it be there. But I'm so fascinated by the new technology and the fact that you you can't shoot down the internet, I suppose. It's going to be there all the time. It can't burn up like my house did a year and a half ago with all of my documents and, you know, things I was collecting from my ancestors. And that's why I chose this to encourage seniors. And I want to applaud the seniors that are participating with me and hoping that you'll go a little further and one of these days get on the website and write something. But even to have your voice recorded and know that it will always be there, and that's why I asked you to say who you are and where you're calling from.
Right.
But let me go on now. Of Bustamante's early life, little is known. He attended elementary school in rural Hanover. Once even in his mother's native village of Dalamy, D-A-L-M-A-L-L-Y. For those who recall his youth, remembers him as a fine horseman who, even as a teenager, owned his personal horse and raced regularly with his numerous male cousins and others. He was restless, extremely extroverted, and gregarious. You know, he was just full of life. Although intelligent, he had little formal education beyond elementary level in Jamaica and resisted the apprenticeship which would have led him to succeed his father as an overseer of the Jamaica landed interest. So I thought that was just very interesting to know that he had all of this personality even as a young person, you know. So, now between 1905 and 1934, Bustamante lived outside of Jamaica, returning to his homeland only for brief visits. Most of this time was spent in Cuba, where he eventually gained employment in the security police of President Alfredo Machado. That is, they have four. He has four different names in the early 1920s. Earlier, he had spent nearly 10 years in Panama, probably between 1908 and 1919. See what I mean? People don't even know for sure because nothing was documented. So they say in Panama, he probably worked as a traffic inspector. There he met Mildred Edith Blank, B-L-A-N-C-K, Blank, the widow of an English consulting engineer, whom he married in Kingston Parish Church on December 1910, while on one of his short visits to the island. Did you know all that about him, Leigh?
Not about his marriage. I know he went to Panama.
Ah.
And knew he went to Cuba.
Uh-huh.
I don't know any details about that.
But we're talking about Panama between 1908 and 1990.
Yeah, well, that's a
long time.
That's around the time that my grandfather and my mother's side went there. When they... canal was being built.
Mm.
So no doubt he contributed in some way to the building effort there.
Right. And of course he returned to Jamaica in 1934, they say here.
Right.
So I thought that was all, you know, quite interesting. For me it was.
Mm.
Because as I say, you know, it's interesting to know if you know of someone on a quest or exercising a passion, whether it's an instructor or, you know, just someone that you encounter. In the moment, you're just in the moment of whatever they're delivering to you or how they're impacting your life. But sometimes after they've left you, whether it's by death or just separation, you know, you wonder,
how it was from when they were young to the time they impacted your life. You know, and I just thought it was interesting that I suppose a lot of people, not that it mattered at the time, but to me, just finding out that he was from, he was a youngster, he had all of this personality in him, you know what I mean, and was considered, I suppose, restless, you know, like there was a passion in him, and he, it didn't die, regardless of what was happening, which we don't know between, you know, Cuba and Panama and all of that. Who knows? You know, perhaps there was a lot that he had to overcome, you know, in the expression of his passion, even when he was young, to get to from where he was to where he left us. And I want to take this opportunity to any of the listeners that might be listening now or later on, especially to the young ones, that we can, you know, get encouragement from people like that, that even though we don't know what adversaries they came upon in their quest to get to where they were when we encountered them, or if we read about them, or if we're inspired by them, we don't just take it for granted that they're successful, you know, overnight. And sometimes it's good to know that regardless of what you are going through as a youngster or at any age, that if you continue to be passionate about whatever you want to accomplish, it is possible. So I see that we have, believe it or not, used up quite a bit of time already. We're only going to be on for an hour tonight. Sometimes we do longer, but I do have another 9 o'clock appointment. So I am going to be covering a couple more things, and then I just wanted to ask our listeners. I see we have quite a few listeners on the board that if they want to interact with us, our loyal listener from the Bronx and our fan from Long Island. Apparently she's not. Does Long Island have a ball team that you want to promote, like our listener from the Bronx promote you, the Yankees?
I will just leave that to him.
All right, you have all the glory.
Well, you know, the people from Brooklyn, they have the Mets. And right now, the Mets are doing better than the Yankees. So,
well, we're going to have a Mets fan soon. You know, I can't talk about my team, although my daughter-in-law went to the Braves game yesterday. I'm in Atlanta, home of the Braves. And she said when she was leaving, she had kids, she said when she was leaving, they were ahead. I said, well, I hope they're still ahead. I didn't hear tonight. I didn't hear today if they did, because I'm not a big sports person.
Right.
I am just so I'm involved in my research of my fabulous island,
mm-hmm,
that I am discovering and getting so excited about everything I read about it, that I haven't been concentrating on the teams, especially those that are losing. So Mr. Lay, you can go on about the Yankees, but now the Mets are ahead of you. Are they in the same league?
No.
Oh, that's how much I know.
I think we better stop talking about the
right.
Can I help you with that one, Margaret?
Okay. Well, I see that I have company because you are not a sports fan, too.
Oh, not that much, no.
Yes. Now, do you know that after Sir Alexander's return to Jamaica, he established himself as a money lender in modest offices on Duke Street? And then, did you know that, Lake?
Well, in some quarters, you call it loan sharking.
Hello. Well, that's not how it's described. Well, I thought you were on a loan shark if your interest rates were exorbitant.
Not necessarily. I mean, you know, if you traffic in money, you could get the title of loan sharking.
Oh, okay.
More so what you say, if you charge in exorbitant rates, then that's even worse.
Mm.
But go on with I'm getting interested in when he really came to fame, because I think it had to do with trade unions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that was much late.
Uh-huh.
But when he came back, you know, he established himself as a businessman, because he was a money lender in a modest office on Duke Street.
Right.
Then the desired area for all businesses.
Yeah, he was very well known in
Duke Street, the place to be.
On Duke Street. When I was a little boy, the same place where I used to go to get a haircut, he used to get a haircut there.
Oh, okay.
On Duke Street. And just a very quick observation. I met him at what was then Idlewild Airport.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's such a... He was then Prime Minister of Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him with about four guys walking down the passage, and I yelled, "Hey, Chief, would
mm-hmm.
you believe that the guy turned around, stopped, came to me, asked me who I was, and introduced himself to me. I said, I know who you are. And I told him who I was, and then he went on. He was just that kind of guy.
Right. So you see, what that's what it's called. Not only did he have charisma, right?
Certainly had
but,
that.
But he was, you know, an enthusiastic person, because and perhaps a conversationalist.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to engage you in conversation. He could have just waved and recognized
you. He could have ignored me.
Right. But being a politician, you know, and
yeah.
as I said, he was in the office of chief at the time, so it would have been rude, you know. So, but
and him being in America, this is Idlewild Airport in Jamaica, Queens, not Jamaica the Island.
Oh, I thought you meant Jamaica the Island.
Oh, this is why it was so
that's
outstanding.
Interesting. Say now that when he had the business on Duke Street in Kingston,
right.
he installed, there is installed here as if she was a piece of furniture, installed Gladys Longbridge as private secretary. Why would they use the word install? I haven't a clue. And she was to accompany him for the rest of his life as confidant, assistant, companion, and finally, after September 6, 1962, I'd left there already, his second wife. Was the man to describe him?
He married her?
He married her.
Okay.
Huh. In 62.
Mm-hmm.
And he described himself as a businessman with Northern. He established himself, as a businessman with North American experience. But while he might have returned with some wealth to the island, his formal training and experience were mostly his own fantastic fabrication.
Yep.
Is that true?
Yes.
I don't know too much about him.
That's why I said what I said about loan shark, you know.
Oh, so I suppose it's like when the people here doctor up their resume.
Ah, that's the word. But you see, he could do it in such a way that
was convincing.
You were going to be impressed one way or the other.
Right. Plus, you know, he was a handsome guy.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Well, you're a man, so you're not looking at him like that. But anyway, and then he became the spokesman for labor. He began his political involvement by writing long, almost daily letters to the press, to the Gleaner Company, the island's leading newspaper. then more than a century in continuous publication, and its smaller rival, the Jamaica Standard. And were you familiar with the Jamaica Standard?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, he wrote on many subjects, but most has to do with the conditions of the lower orders of the working class and the political situation and the local administrators. Gradually, he became involved in the poorest marches and other demonstrations of the urban masses. He was interned briefly for this activity. He went to jail. The widespread labor disturbances of the years of 1937 and 1938 provided the opportunity to establish himself as the foremost labor leader in the island. He combined the orator of Marcus Garvey with the modified spirit of the former Alexander Bedwood and Solomon Hewitt, but he made the new movement his own instrument. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. He borrowed from former leaders and conjured up his own style. I like that. Mm-hmm. In January of 1939, he registered the Bustamante Industrial Trade Union over the opposition of the governor and others who declared that a union should not possess the name of an individual. Within 4 years, the union represented more than 80% of all organized workers in Jamaica, mainly among the rural agricultural workers. The constitution of the union made Bustamante president for life, with unrestricted control of its finances. That's clever.
Sure is.
Right?
Sure is.
That is very clever. I was very intrigued with all of this because I was not familiar with it. You know, I knew him as a politician or knew of him as a politician, but not all of these little details that I find rather interesting. I said, you know, although
he knew what he was doing all the way.
Right. Unrestricted control of the finances.
Right.
Now, between 1939 and 1942, Bustamante was imprisoned by the governor of Jamaica, Sir Arthur Richards, under wartime emergency powers for a riot of addressing a group of longshoremen on the Kingston waterfront. The internment made a political martyr of Bustamante and enhanced the position of his union among the masses. During Bustamante's internment, Norman Manley and his followers rebuilt and expanded the organization of the Bustamante Industrial Trade Union. The eventual release of Bustamante from prison derived from the unceasing efforts of Manley, who had earlier founded the People's National Party as the political instrument for forging a new nationalism in Jamaica. And indeed, it was through the efforts of the People's National Party, modeled after the British Labour Party, that Jamaica gained a new political status in 1944 with universal adult suffrage, and an elected legislator with limited self-government. Isn't that something?
There Working was also a candy named after him, too.
Beg your pardon?
There was also a candy named after him, Bustamante.
Oh, yes!
Very good.
That is interesting. That is the one that Bus Major.
Very hard. Yes.
Is that what it was called? Bus Major.
That will broke out your teeth.
That is
very
so
good.
What a labyrinth. The minute you said it, I remembered Bus Major. And that is the Bustamante. Ain't that something?
Bustamante backbone.
Yes. Now, immediately, no, according to this, and I'm not political, so I couldn't care less. But according to this, it was Norman Manley who get him out of jail. But they say, immediately after his release, Buster Bunty broke with Manley, reorganized the union, and formally launched the Jamaica Labour Party on July 1943 to rival the People's National Party and the Jamaica Democratic Party in the first general election held in December of 1944. The Jamaica Labour Party won 23 of the 32 seats in the House of Representatives with 41% of the votes, and Bustamante became Jamaica's first chief minister. Oh, boy. Along with being the head of government, Bustamante served as mayor of Kingston. I didn't know that. And St. Andrew. In 1947, the Jamaica Labour Party won re-election in the national elections in 1949 with a reduced representation. More significantly, the party gained less popular votes than the opposition People's National Party. They gained. Although Bustamante lost the general election of 1955 and 1959, he remained leader of the opposition in the Jamaica Parliament until 1962. He was a prominent voice and effective presence in the political life of the country. He established a vital link between the trade union base and the political party and made his combination the most effective instrument of political operation in Jamaica. I have one question that I lived there so long, I don't know. Are the unions still in existence? Do you know, Leigh?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Now, they say, and I like this, whoever wrote this, Bustamante virtually, single-handedly destroyed the West Indian Federation, established in 1958 to unify and order the political evolution of the English West Indian territories. He single-handedly destroyed it. His decision was not to participate in the Federation and to orchestrate the Jamaican opposition to it in 1961 referendum led to the demise of the Federation in 1962. So I wondered, how could that be possible? How could he alone destroyed it? That don't sound right.
Well, yes, because he had a tremendous influence on the movement, and as such, he had the backing of all of the Labour Party behind him. So whatever he said goes, you know.
Oh, I see.
And if he wasn't in favor of it, that was it.
Got you. Well, you know, in some countries what they would call that. But anyway, do you know how old he was when he died?
No, how old was he?
93.
Mm-hmm.
He lived a long life.
Yeah.
Very long life.
Colorful life.
Right.
I was, I probably told the story already. I was in Venezuela and they were showing a declaration of independence by the Latin countries.
Mm-hmm.
and the countries in the South America, some countries in South America. And on the bottom of the declaration was signed Alexander Bustamante.
Oh, really?
And I yelled, everybody's looking at me like I'm nuts. I said, that was my prime minister.
Oh, wow. Taking a little
This was in Venezuela, you know.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Very interesting. Well, I hope that our listeners enjoyed our little reminiscing and history about the parish of Hanover, that although it was it's the second smallest parish on the island of our 14, gave birth to a larger than life charismatic icon, Sir Alexander Bustamante. So we're going to celebrate him and also the parish of Hanover. as we close out our evening labrish. And I want to thank my listeners for joining us and hope that you'll be here next week when we'll be celebrating another parish. And as I said, you know, it's interesting that each parish has something special about it, either some special person, something special about the geography, the past, the history. And it's so interesting to me to just dig up some of these things, you know, and find some lessons in them. Because as we go over the parish, we found that there were a lot of struggles going on, you know, in different races, or even within the church, within a certain set of people, you know, whether they were planters or slaves, and there were people on either side helping each other. You know, Leah, I found that very interesting.
Yeah.
Because as I said last week, I was wondering how this very strong black man, Claude McKay, you know, and I was speaking with one of my friends who is a writer too, and she was familiar with Claude McKay. I was not before. And she said that she met one of the descendants, or somebody claimed to be a cousin or an uncle of him, when she was in school in Jamaica. And I said to her how impressed I was that he was the descendant of a slave and had stories about, you know, his forefathers saying that if they separated them, they would kill themselves. Remember that part of his story?
Yes.
And she said to me, well, he wasn't black. I said, yes, he was. She said, well, this person that was claiming that he was a descendant of him was very light-skinned. I said, well, you know, I suppose that's possible. But from what I read, from the history that I got, he died here in America. He didn't go back to Jamaica. And he came here when he was 22.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, although there might have been other people with his name, you know, or from his line that intermarried. All of that.
If you think of it, I mean, that's not unusual about Jamaicans.
No, not at all.
Some are light, some are dark.
Right. So I'm saying him directly, though, was quite his picture. You know, now that I'm going through some of the things that he published, his picture on it, and he was clearly African. I mean, there was no, I didn't see where there was any mixed in him. So, although perhaps, you know, people came from different parts of Africa and they had different features, you know, he was a good-looking black man. So, but it's interesting now that to find out now that here's this Englishman that I'm reading about from Hanover who really helped him to get here,
right,
and recognized him as a writer. And recognize his talent. Because last week we spoke about, or when we discussed him, we spoke about him publishing his first poem when he was 15, which was, you know, considering the year he was born, which was quite a feat, I think, you know, and quite an accomplishment. So my point is there's encouragement to know that I say, you know, if you have a passion, and you keep with it, or if you have a goal and you keep at it, the universe, the God, somebody will work out a way that help will come your way.
Right.
And that's the point I want to make. And when we are being supported and helped, it doesn't matter where it comes from. We just bless it. You know, it can come from your adversaries. You never know where it's going to come, or what might be considered. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I always try to find some encouraging things that we can connect to the now and connect the past, things that happened in the past that were good and supportive that we can relate to, that we can bring into our existence today, and how we can help someone else, how we can encourage someone else to be the best that they can be, you know, in whatever venture they participate. So I want to close it tonight with that little platform message.
and hope that our listeners have enjoyed the show and will join us again next week. We're here each Wednesday on Blog Talk Radio at Backyard Labrish, and I hope that all our listeners on the board are on our list and they'll tell their friends about our show, and so that we have a lot of easy cheers here in the backyard as we sit and reminisce about the beautiful island of Jamaica, which I think all of my listeners that are participating with me are part of. So I want to say good night and make it a great week. And I hope you'll come back again next week. This is Margaret signing off on Backyard Labrish. So bye. Who's there?